Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, chapter 9, answers by citing the Lord's version, text number 6. Saha hi chintayan, while thus thinking, dvi-tu aksaram, syllables, ikada, once upon a time, ambasi, in the water, upasina, heard it nearby, dvi, twice, gaditam, uttered, vachara, words, vibhu, the great, sparseshu, in the sparsa letters, yad, which, shodasham, the 16th, ekavimsham, and the 21st, niskinchananam, of the renounced order of life, nipa, O king, yad, what is, tanam, wealth, vidu, as it is known. Translation. While thus engaged in thinking in the water, Brahmaji heard twice from nearby two syllables joined together. One of the syllables was taken from the 16th and the other from the 21st of the sparsa alphabets, and both joined to become the wealth of the renounced order of life. Purport. In Sanskrit language, the consonant alphabets are divided into two divisions, namely the sparsa varnas and the talavya varnas. From ka to ma, the letters are known as the sparsa varnas, and the 16th of the group is called ta, whereas the 21st letter is called pa. So when they are joined together, the word tapa, or penance, is constructed. This penance is the beauty and wealth of the brahmanas and the renounced order of life. According to Bhagavad's philosophy, every human being is meant simply for this tapa, and for no other reason, for no other business, because by penance only can one realize his self, and self-realization, not sense gratification, is the business of human life. This tapa or penance was begun from the very beginning of the creation, and it was first adopted by the Supreme Spiritual Master, Lord Brahma. By tapasya only can one get the profit of human life, and not by a polished civilization of animal life. The animal does not know anything except sense gratification in the jurisdiction of eat, drink, be merry, and enjoy. But the human being is made to undergo tapasya for going back to Godhead, back home. When Lord Brahma was perplexed about how to construct the material manifestations in the universe, and went down within the water to find out the means and source of his lotus seed, he heard the word tapa vibrated twice. Taking the path of tapa is the second birth of the desiring disciple. The word upasrinot is very significant. It is similar to upanayan, or bringing the disciple nearer to the spiritual master for the path of tapa. So Brahmaji was thus initiated by Lord Krishna. And this fact is corroborated by Brahmaji himself in his book, The Brahma Samhita. In the Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma has sung in every verse, Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Thus, Brahma was initiated by the Krishna mantra, by Lord Krishna himself, and thus he became a Vaishnava, or a devotee of the Lord, because he was able to construct the huge universe. It is stated in the Brahma Samhita that Lord Brahma was initiated into the 18-letter Krishna mantra, which is generally accepted by all the devotees of Lord Krishna. We follow the same principle because we belong to the Brahma Sampradaya, correct in its cyclic chain from Brahma to Narada, from Narada to Vyas, Vyas to Madhava Muni, from Madhava Muni to Madhavendra Puri, from Madhavendra Puri to Iswara Puri, from Iswara Puri to Lord Chaitanya, and gratitude to his divine grace, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, our divine master. One who is thus initiated in the disciplic succession is able to achieve the same result or power of creation. Chanting of the holy name is the only shelter of the desireless pure devotee of the Lord. Simply by such tapasya or penance, the devotee of the Lord achieves all perfection like Lord Brahma. Om Gyanati Manandasya Ganandana Salakya Chaturamitam Nena Tasmai Si Gurudeinama Chitei Tannamana Vistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Pradamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasani Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada is stating that tapasya is the duty of human life. This is based on Srimad Bhagavatam, as Srila Prabhupada stated. So that we find in the first, in the fifth canto, in the instructions that are given by Lord Rishabhdev to his 100 sons, in the verse Nayam deho deha batam ye loke kastam kamam arate vipujam ye tapo divyam putra kiyena sattvam sugyetyasmat pravasukyam tanutam. Where it is explained that his human form of life is not meant for sense gratification, but rather that it is meant for performing austerities which can bring us to the state of transcendental happiness, Brahma Sukha. So that is really the goal of life. And we remind ourselves again and again of this goal of life, because the material energy is powerful, and the illusory energy can so easily make us forget the goal of life. Vidvamsam apikarsati, even a man of knowledge is struggling. Balaran indriyam gramo vidvamsam apikarsati. The senses are so strong that even a man of learning is easily led astray. Therefore, the devotees are practicing austerity. It is said, yagya danas tapaschaiva pavaniham manistinam, that performance of sacrifice, performance of austerities, giving in charity is even purifying saintly persons. This is never to be given up at any time. So it becomes a way of life to constantly look for purification. Even the great exalted pure devotees will not neglecting performing activities for their purification. And as such, one must live a life of prescribed duty. Prescribed duty is the life of tapasya, because it is the life where we are not acting according to our own thinking, feeling and willing. Tapasya begins there, when we are not acting according to our own thinking, feeling and willing, but when we act according to the desire of the, as indicated by the Supreme Lord in the scriptures or by his representatives. Then that tapasya may extend into different types of austerities. Austerities of the body, austerities of the mind, austerities of speech. So that the austerity begins to cover every aspect of life. Also there, in these austerities, it is mentioned that one must surrender to superiors and work under the direction of a spiritual master or other authorities, such as elders and so on. So That is the first principle, that one austerity is that one works under authority at all times in spiritual life. There is no question of ever being independent in spiritual life. It doesn't work. It simply doesn't work. At all times, as soon as one enters into spiritual life, one must accept spiritual authority. This is not an easy thing, especially in the Western world, where our faith in authority is thoroughly broken, where we have seen that most authorities are simply corrupted. So how can one have faith in authorities? Prabhupada said, all rascals, small rascals and big rascals. And the big rascals lead the small rascals, and that is all. But all rascals. This could be taken as a free translation of Andayatande Upaniyamana Tipisatantram Uradamni Bada. That the blind are leading the blind. Andayatande Upaniyamana. And are leading others into becoming more and more bound up in the three modes of material nature, which binds us to birth and death. So tapa is part of sadhana bhakti. When we look at the prema bhakta, I have been contemplating now about Srila Prabhupada as the prema bhakta, because the deadline for writing a Vyasa Puja for Srila Prabhupada is now approaching fast on the 15th of April. So I'm getting there, and I haven't started yet. So it's now or never, kind of. So I was thinking this morning about Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena Santasa Deva Vidyeza Vilokayanti Yam Shyama Sundaram Achincha Gunaswarupam Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. About Srila Prabhupada's loving vision, those eyes that are anointed with love of God, I was thinking how Srila Prabhupada just looked upon Krishna with loving eyes and drank in that darshan in all its unlimited aspects, and how it filled his heart, and then he turned around and looked upon the world with loving eyes. And that, of course, is the source for doing all the miraculous activities that he did, like transcending age, going to preach at 70 or at age 77, dancing in front of the Rath cart in the London Rathyatra in 1973. These are just some examples of transcending age and doing something miraculous, all on the strength of love. It was, we read in Lila Amrita, how during one lecture, Srila Prabhupada became overwhelmed. He became emotional and he became stunned. And for some time he did not speak. And then a tear came in the corner of his eyes, which was very brilliant. It was as brilliant as a diamond. And many devotees saw it and were speaking about it after. So it wasn't one person, it was many people saw. And did you see that diamond in the corner of Prabhupada's eye? I was thinking about this, and I was thinking, yes, this is just like, just as a tiny cloud is an indication of an ocean. As we see a cloud in the sky, we know there's an ocean of water, and that from there, all that, these clouds are evaporating, and in this way, the tiny cloud is an indication of an ocean. That diamond tear was an indication of of the unlimited ocean of love of God in Prabhupada's heart. So how can we speak of tapa for a devotee at that stage? Where is the question of austerity? Every step is just joyfully performed. Every step is just completely connected to Krishna. Every step is just absolutely wonderful. That is a fact. If we think of Srila Prabhupada, surely he was always, always very close to Krishna. So in order to get some inspiration for writing a Vyasa Puja offering, I started reading about Srila Prabhupada, because otherwise, well, I'm not the best writer anyway, so it's always a little difficult for me to write. I like Satsarup Maharaj. He wrote Lilamrita in poetry form. Right? It is a number of small books. Yes, and there's a few up in the room there, and I know that they are there whenever I come here, so look at them, because they're like sutras. It is like Prabhupada's activities in the form of sutras. And at one point, there are many nice things he says in these sutras. For example, he says that Lord Ramachandra was trying to go to Lanka, and as his assistants, he had a monkey of armies. So, but Prabhupada had to do it with hippies from the Lower East Side. Right? Like that, he said. So that's very nice. And so he also said that when Prabhupada displayed his angers upon the Asuras, who were making their atheistic claims, or who were simply supporting animal slaughter, when Prabhupada displayed his anger, then one could understand that Krishna was angry. Right? That is a very nice point, right? That when Prabhupada was strict, then we know that Krishna was displaying his strictness. When Prabhupada was lenient, then we knew that Krishna was displaying his lenient. Truly, one could see him as the representative of Krishna, because so much absorbed, so much intensely absorbed in remembering Krishna. So, therefore, what is the question of austerity? Austerity seems to indicate some form of suffering. Where is the question of austerity in the life of the pure devotee? He's not experiencing it per se in that way. It is all nectarian. And yet there is sacrifice and austerity, because Prabhupada was 70 years old, and his body was old and worn out, and even that is when he began what to speak when he was 80. It's a huge difference between 70 and 80. So there was austerity at the same time. But that austerity was joyfully performed. It was not an austerity from suffering and suffering, and somehow or other we must suffer it out for Krishna. That was not there. But suffering was there. And Prabhupada was alone, and somehow or other preached in Delhi, in the heat of Delhi, and distributed back to Gaudiates, and got gored by a cow or a bull, and which hit him quite heavy in the ribs, and knocked him out, knocked him off his feet. These things were certainly very difficult. Prabhupada suffered. But he suffered that very patiently and gladly. So even the Prema Bhakta is somehow or other performing austerity, but it is not affecting his consciousness. His consciousness doesn't become predominated by it. In his conscious, internally, he remains always joyful. This is the spirit, and in this way, he can just carry and carry unlimited amount of sinful people back home to Godhead. It is draining. If one has to deal with the confusion, we remember that in the Lilamrita it is described how Prabhupada was translating early in the morning in New York in his flat, and somehow or other someone knocked on the door in the night, and there was this girl, and she was clearly mentally not okay, and she just called out something like Baha'u'llah very loud, and then she stepped into Prabhupada's room. So Prabhupada, following the codes of sannyas, immediately stepped out of the room. Right? But then she also stepped out of the room and closed the door. And it was one of those doors that you pull, like in America they have these door knobs, and you pull, click, door locked, and you're locked out. So Prabhupada was locked out. Anyway, he went over to the devotees who were sleeping on the other side, woke them up. But when this girl was there in calling out in her madness, Prabhupada said, "It is the darkest of darkness." The darkest of darkness. So certainly he saw it like that. He saw it like that, the darkest of darkness. When Prabhupada in a New York lecture gave a description about Vrindavan, he described the glories of Vrindavan and how wonderful Vrindavan was, and then he sort of stated how hellish New York was, right? And it was, obviously, it was, for one who's appreciating the glories of Vrindavan. New York is hell there. Then for one who is really absorbed in Vrindavan, there is no attraction to New York, no glamour, other than that it's a good field to reach a lot of people, but in itself, hellish place. Whereas, you know, we might be a little enamored, well, New York, where are you going next week? Well, I'm going to New York. Wow, Times Square. Times Square is something else. It is bizarre. That's all I can say. Because they have these big high-rise buildings, and they have these electronic screens all the way on the side of the buildings. Yeah. All the buildings. And they're constantly showing different moving colors and pictures. So it is like psychedelic. It is like, it's worse than LSD. It's just intense. So, hellish. Srila Prabhupada went there. So, just some examples of austerity he performed. And austerity takes energy. It takes energy to deal with the madness of people. It takes energy to deal with sinful people. We meet sinful people. I also recently met a man who had a serious history in jail, and I could see this is heavy. There's some heavy karma here. This is not a light thing. There's heavy karma here, and if we deal with such people and take up their mission, that karma comes our way. As soon as one tries to deliver someone from this world, there comes the karma, because one becomes involved in the life of that person and has to support him. One has to become supportive to that person. It is not so easy to deal with all that karma. And that karma gradually begins to weigh one down. But Srila Prabhupada was so exalted and so filled with transcendental love for Krishna that it internally would not affect him. Therefore, he was able to take all these sinful people and just take their sinful karma and guide them back to Godhead and somehow or other deal with them. Just to spend the whole day long speaking with sinful people, looking in sinful faces, is draining. We know it because we live in a sinful world, which is draining. Just a day downtown is draining. Going to an airport, it takes energy because this airport is so sensual. It is just designed, you know, to sort of entice the senses. So, what can be said there? It creates this image of a glamour world, of how nice the material world really is, which is, of course, totally false. One who is internally full of love of God cannot be weighed down by austerity. But others can. Others can. So if we are not filled with love of God, we certainly have limits. There are limits to our austerity, to what we can take, what we can handle. There are limits. So we must see the difference. For us, we cannot be overly brave in taking on this austerity and that austerity. We need shelter. We very much need shelter. We should look for shelter. We see sometimes new people are eager to fast very rigidly and very austerely. Not recommended, actually. Not at all. Rather the opposite. Take prasadam, take shelter of prasadam. Because the process for getting love of God is not austerity. Austerity is helpful. It is said it is the wealth of the renounced order of life, the wealth of the brahmanas. That is fine. But it cannot give any love. Austerity itself cannot give any love for Krishna. Austerity is not a limb of bhakti. It is not giving us any bhakti. But services, service to Krishna, that can give us bhakti. And austerity performed in service, that is a cause of bhakti. So we are interested in service to Krishna. And whatever austerity comes in the course of service, that will take. And that's what we see in Prabhupada. Prabhupada, for example, would not go bare feet around Vrindavan. He was wearing shoes on the parikrama. So I like that because I have soft feet and I don't like sharp stones at all. I mean, if I go around Govardhan, I can chant maybe 6 rounds, because I can't chant. It's like, ah, oh, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Vrindavan.
So in this way, Prabhupada was not performing the greatest austerity, but in preaching he was, for spreading Krishna consciousness in devotional service he was ready for any austerity. And Prabhupada was in New York, he had a severe cold, so the devotees were getting very concerned, said, please take rest, please take medicine, and they asked Prabhupada to change his ticket and stay a little longer. And Prabhupada said, no, but who will preach? And then he said, well, Srila Prabhupada, you don't have to preach, just rest. And Prabhupada said, if I don't preach, then who will look after you? It's like, you know, saying you don't have to preach. What do you mean, right? It's like, you know, if I don't preach, then the whole thing collapses. Right? That's what Prabhupada meant. And he took that austerity to travel with the cold and everything. So for service, there was no limit to the austerity. But no unnecessary austerity. No austerity for austerity's sake was interesting to Prabhupada. So that is really our movement, right? We are not a movement of austerity in the sense of trying to live such an austere lifestyle. Our austerity is service, is to... And Prabhupada said, just as in the railway, everyone is working to keep the wheels turning. Right? Everyone is part of that in the railway, to keep the wheels turning. In the same way, in this movement, everyone is service, is part of Harinam Sankirtan. We are servants of the Holy Name. And in this way, that is our focus. Servants of the glorification of Krishna. And in that, we perform our austerity. And otherwise, it is not so important. So it's not who can wear the thinnest clothes in the winter and so on, that he is the most advanced. Right? We saw one devotee who never wore a shirt in Vrindavan for quite some years, and even in the winter. Of course, he was always in the kitchen where there's a big fire going on. Yes. Naturally. Right. And of course everyone was looking, wow, not wearing a shirt, wow. But it didn't help. It didn't help. Because eventually he couldn't maintain spiritual standards. So it didn't give him a higher taste so that he would be protected from Maya. It didn't protect him. So these things are not, austerity is not such an issue, but service is, and then whatever comes, that we must do. A little bit of austerity maybe to support that service could be there, obviously. If we never rise early in the morning, then how can one can expect to get some strength? If we never chant good rounds, how can we expect to get strength? That is also service. But still, the focus is service. And because the focus is to distribute the mercy. That is the focus.
Austerity in terms of bhakti. And
If you want to understand which of three is to take, yes. I think so. Accept what is favorable, reject what is unfavorable. But then I'm thinking is, then if you look at someone like Prabhupada, it just gets to another dimension.
Right.
He's not looking at what is favorable, what is not favorable for my spiritual advancement. He's just looking at like what is favorable to give out the mercy. So, and if he himself has to, you know, sacrifice something, that doesn't mean much, you know, a few years of his life or whatever. I mean, he doesn't worry about that. So it has to go there, you know, to this element that we look at what is favorable and what is unfavorable for giving out. Shift has to go from there. From in the beginning, we may look what is favorable for me, what is unfavorable for my spiritual advancement. That's the primary, secondary, advanced level. That's what we need. How can I give it out to others?
Anyone?
Yeah, we pay a price. No, you can't do anything for nothing. I mean, it's like you pay a price. I mean, Prabhupada flew around the world. He paid a price, but undoubtedly. But okay, he could handle that payment. But it comes, you know. I mean, obviously, paid a price. I think how can we know that we're not over endeavoring? Is by not being independent. The problem is when we are independent, then we have this big question, how can I know? But when we are not independent, when we work always under spiritual authority, then we're very protected, because the spiritual authority will tell us, now try a little harder, now slow down. Right? Like that. The spiritual authority will watch us, and he's more experienced, he or she is more experienced. So, a more experienced person can better understand where the limits are and what to do, and it works on that principle. So, therefore, Vaishnava, simply, as soon as there is some sense of maybe I'm overdoing it. As soon as there's a feeling that maybe I'm overdoing it, should I slow down or not? Consult the Vaishnavas. Then it is, it's all right, especially senior Vaishnavas. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Pajalpa is simply when we are speaking about mundane things for the sake of sense gratification. If we just say, speak about some material topics with the idea that we'll connect it to Krishna, then it is okay. Prabhupada was on a morning walk and one man came and Prabhupada said, good morning. And the devotee said, why didn't you say Hare Krishna? Prabhupada said, I said good morning so that he could wish me a good morning and in this way do some devotional service. Right? it seemed mundane, but actually he always had a spiritual purpose in mind. So if we don't have a spiritual purpose in our discussion of mundane topics, then it is Padalpa. Then it is Padalpa.
Anyone?
Take risks anyway, whether we want or not, right? I mean, we're surrounded by the enemy. Maya's agents are everywhere. So what's our chance? I mean, we cannot dig ourselves in on farms, you know, just like block out the world. We have to deal with the world. So risk we have to take, inevitably so. But yeah, that protection is there. Lord Chaitanya grants that. Preach. But then again, you cannot always just preach, you know. You cannot just be so preachy, and it's like, you know, if you work at work, preach, preach, preach. I mean, it's not realistic, you know. So we have to just also neutral dealings with the world sometimes. That's just inevitably so. The idea that you always have to jump on everyone immediately. And it's not practical. But at the same time, there are just ordinary neutral things. But if we can, why not? It is nice. Yeah, I think it can come. But sometimes, you know, just by being who we are.